The folks who are doing the things that they're not good at and still enjoying going to the gym every day are the people who have fallen in love with the process. So they have a deep understanding of, these are my goals, whatever they may be. And I know I have to do X, Y, or Z to get to my goals. And I'm so stoked at the opportunity to do this sucky thing to get to where I want to go.
Hey, it's Ben Wise, and this is The Fitness Movement. It's Ben again. The Fitness Movement is brought to you by Zor Fitness. Zor Fitness is my company and my platform to deliver training-related content to people just like you. The site features in-depth articles, movement breakdowns, and our online training program, The Protocol. And I offer one-on-one remote coaching for fitness athletes. So I hope you check it out. Head over to ZorFitness.com. That's Z-O-A-R Fitness.com. See you there. Today, we've got Chris Hardenberg on the show. He is a remote coach. He's a CrossFit athlete. He's a personal friend of mine. And we actually met through wrestling, and you'll hear us reminisce a little bit about that at the beginning. He actually doesn't talk about his business much. He's a rather humble guy, but he is accepting one-on-one clients. He is on Instagram at C_hard_fit and at Forge Through Faith. That would be his business account. You can also learn more about his coaching business at joinforgethroughfaith.com. Today, we get into a number of different topics, including mental toughness and what that actually means. I'm trying to define that a little bit. And then we dive deep on mindset and how to develop the ability to be able to know when to sort of dig deep in a workout and when to pull back a little bit. We even get into how to effectively coach mindset and program for mental toughness. And we transition a little bit. We talk more about movement economy and how to develop an eye for detail as an athlete and how to maximize your longevity in movements and ultimately like through your career as a whole, just by moving better and with more efficiency. We talk about how you can actually teach that process and how you can learn from other athletes. So without further ado, let's get into this conversation with Chris Hardenberg. So Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ben. Excited to be here.
So we have quite a bit in common in terms of our story. I've known you since my early college. I guess technically like in high school, I went to a camp that you were working at. So we've known each other for a while, kind of acquaintances for a while. And we've slowly gotten to know each other a little bit better over time. So you were a college wrestler. Well, we went to the same college, first of all.
Yes.
Masai College, now Masai University. We went there. So you were a college wrestler, I was a college wrestler. You were now a CrossFit athlete and a CrossFit coach. I'm a CrossFit athlete and a CrossFit coach. You were a health and physical education teacher and a teacher for a period of time, a couple of years, and so was I. So in that way, we have like a very similar storylines, at least in that aspect. So I'm kind of curious, like, what do you think was probably your biggest takeaway from wrestling that has benefited your competitive CrossFit career as an athlete?
Oh, man. So first off, to comment on kind of what you said, it's very interesting how like our lives have kind of almost run like parallel. We have a lot of similar themes. But what has translated from that wrestling background to the CrossFit background, I would say is like the willingness to accept pain. Anyone who has done CrossFit, even at like an in-class recreational level, understands how, you know, you may get into a workout and have to push through quite a bit of discomfort. And anyone who has wrestled at even a relatively high level has realized you have to endure quite a bit of discomfort. And in my experience, even with other folks in the sport, I've competed and worked out with wrestlers who in a workout are able to go to like this like weird space that like other folks might not be able to. And it's because it's like almost like that muscle's been trained. Like I know what it's like to go to near blackout in a workout and like just kind of push through. So I think that's definitely something that's translated, is just that the idea of pushing your limits and finding those boundaries.
Yeah, I would totally agree. that was just like something that was super intuitive when I got into CrossFit. I was like, oh yeah, I can do this every day, which is its own problem. Yeah. Like that was like part of the mentality is like, yeah, you train that hard every day and you're not usually always in control of it,
right?
Which is the other thing. It's like CrossFit, like, you know, if it hurts too bad, you just stop moving.
Right.
Where you, if you stop moving in wrestling, it's just going to get worse for you.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of something where, and you kind of touched on it. So it was almost like, it's almost like a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
When it comes to CrossFit specifically, because CrossFit, the sport aspect of CrossFit, but then you have the training aspect and how to improve at it. And anyone who's done any significant level of physical training understands that there, it's like the risk and risk reward, right? Like you push your body to a certain point and then your body has to do certain things to recover. And you have to balance those things to create further adaptations. And that was something that had to be a learned habit for me, was because of that exact aspect. You know, we walk into practice and it's like, all right, I'm just going to run my head into a wall. And it wasn't, honestly, from a wrestling perspective, it wasn't until my senior year where Coach Brunk actually started to adjust some of the trainings and some of like ebbs and flows and practice and stuff like that. So getting into CrossFit, that was almost like a foreign concept to me, to be like, man, I really feel like crap today. Like I'm going to take today off. Like yeah, that was, no,
it's like, get in there.
What's that?
Get in there.
Yeah.
It's you'll be fine.
And that was definitely something earlier on in my younger years where I should be like my prime adaptation years. I didn't adapt a lot because it was like, you know, I had my son, right? And, you know, when you have kids, you don't sleep super well. To be okay with like, you know what, I'm just going to go in and move today. That was like not a thing. It was like, all right, man, I'll just take more pre-workout and then just go try to crush some squats. So yeah. So although in certain aspects it helped push, in other aspects, it's like it stunted progress in terms of not knowing when to pull back.
Yeah, for sure. I would totally agree. I mean, that my experience was exactly the same, where I was like, I know how to push really hard every single day. And it's more so now being able to develop more of a relationship with that gas pedal, so to speak, where if you're going to push really hard one day, you're going to have to ease off another day just because you can't keep grinding like that forever. Stuff breaks. Mm-hmm. And I feel like usually only the people that have broken themselves in some way or have a really experienced coach working with them who's going to tell them not to do that are the people who, yeah, I mean, it's, they just run themselves into the ground after a little bit.
So how did you learn to make that adjustment?
Like I just said, I think I broke myself. Like, you know, obviously like that sounds really bad, but like on maybe a, you know, less severe scale, like.
Well, you had a knee injury, right? Is that.
Yeah. I've had 4 knee surgeries. And that was part of it too. Is like, if you have something like that, I mean, I think sometimes your body just shuts you down.
Sure.
Where like, you know, maybe it wasn't like a catastrophic, like my meniscus didn't tear because I was tired, but stuff is going to pop up much more often when you're already sort of broken down a little bit more. So I think that stuff happens. Yeah. Maybe not as a direct result, but you're just more susceptible to injury in those scenarios and you'll, you know, stunt yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is there anything else from the wrestling aspect that you feel like has really helped develop you into who you are as a CrossFit athlete?
Yeah, I think it's just like the, maybe like the no nonsense approach isn't the best term, but that's the one that kind of popped into my head. You know, I tend to try not to take myself super seriously. But when getting into a competitive aspect, I mean, you know, I was fortunate enough to compete at Wanapalooza last year, and I still have guys I work with crack jokes because I just, you know, there was one workout and there was like a buzzer you would hit, and I got so amped up at the end of the workout, I smacked the buzzer so hard that my whole palm bruised, like like my entire hand swelled up. So I think it's just like that intensity level, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you kind of touched on it, like the ability to keep moving, right? Because there's some interesting differences between wrestling and CrossFit, right? Like one thing is the weights in CrossFit never change, right? 45 pounds is 45 pounds. And if it's too heavy, it's too heavy. Or whereas like, I think we've both been in matches where you're wrestling a guy and you can feel them wilt. And that's like,
yeah,
this is great. My life is actually getting easier now.
Hmm.
But conversely, because of the constants in CrossFit, it doesn't factor in the other side where like when you're the one just getting your head beat in.
Yeah. Yeah. Those tend to stick out in your mind more than the times that you beat somebody else up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but again, right, the concept to keep moving. So in workouts that I want to slow down, being able to mentally remind myself that's like, you really don't have to. That's definitely translated as well.
Even I think sometimes more of like the intangibles of like an in-person competition, because obviously wrestling is like you're right up in somebody's face, but even be like between periods and stuff, you can look over and like see other person's body language and, you know, see if they're, you know, breathing super hard, or they bent over in their corner, or they getting their like little puke bucket ready in the corner. But like all that stuff, like you end up playing into the psychological aspect of the sport much more, that you miss a lot in like the online qualifier environment of, you know, the open or, you know, whatever online qualifier you're doing. Yeah.
And then something that also dawned on me was just from a skill perspective, I find that I was able to pick up the body weight movement skills way faster than like the implement movement skills. Now, granted, I'm someone who was fortunate enough to be in a weight room for whether it was for football or wrestling since high school. I wouldn't say I've learned the best technique or developed the best movement quality in those arenas, but something as simple as like double unders, right? The amount of rope that I jumped in my life was immense. I didn't enjoy running. So like in high school and college, even to cut weight, I would just go. So like in high school, I would go to my parents downstairs. I would turn the TV on and I knew a show was a half hour. So I said, all right, I just threw the layers on, jumped rope and watched TV. And then, so I knew I was getting in a half hour to an hour of jumping rope, which sounds crazy now if you think about it, yeah, right?
That's bonkers.
Right, 30 to 60 minutes straight of jumping rope. But well, over time to then come into CrossFit and say, okay, you're going to keep doing that, but just turn your wrists a little faster, or like even using a jump rope that's a speed rope. Like I was used to, you know what I mean? I was used to using like a heavy, like almost like boxer's jump rope. And then it's like, no, they make them super thin now and they spin really fast. It's like, that was something that translated. Whereas, you know, flip the script to somebody else, you know, you'll see people come in who maybe have a different background, and like double unders is like this Rubik's cube that can't be solved. So I definitely think that helped as well. Or even pull-ups, like the number of pull-ups and push-ups we would do.
The number of like 10 sets of 10 pull-ups we've done.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. No, that's just like that base, I think, is something that oftentimes people that are, you know, whether they're in a coaching position or just in a position to work with other athletes, or I guess technically not athletes, like people who weren't an athlete up to that point in their life, and they're like, you know, have a high biological age, low training age, they haven't spent a ton of time just accumulating all those reps. Like, I don't know. It's just something where it's, you take it for granted a lot of times. And I think it's just something that it's good to remind yourself of once in a while.
Yeah, seriously.
Cool. I want to transition a little bit more to the mental toughness aspect. I mean, obviously, like we kind of touched on this already, but is that something you think about when you're, you know, coaching, doing program design, for example, or is that more like a result of just like putting in consistent hard work over a period of time?
Now, do you mean in terms of myself or like working with my athletes?
Working with your athletes now.
Yeah. So in terms of working with my athletes, I rarely program workouts where I'm like, okay, this workout is to kick so-and-so's face in and see how they deal with adversity. Every once in a while that does happen. And that's the thought process as to why I'm doing it. But more often than not, for me personally, it's the conversations I have with my clients around the workouts. I found that in my coaching endeavor, the X's and O's, I call them, like the sets and the reps are important. But I learned a lot more even from like, okay, when someone records their results, the little nuance, like the little sentence they're like, they leave as a comment next to it. It's like, whoa, okay, well, where did that come? Why was that good? Or why was that bad? Or why were you disappointed with this? Or why did you, you know, why do you keep referencing a poor performance? You know, I hear that a lot. I had a poor performance in that workout. And it's like, man, this is training. Like, this shouldn't be a performance. This should be, you know what I mean? This should be part of the process. So I think a lot of it is in the conversations, and then being able to have the conversations like you and I just talked about, where when to push the pedal, when to back off, and then being able to put things in perspective of like what's in your control, what's outside of your control, and being able to look at one session as part of a giant bucket of sessions that are accumulating towards a goal. And for me, I think that's a big part of mental toughness, is being able to show up regardless of those circumstances and do something to try to get yourself 1% better. Now, the details of that and what that looks like on a day-to-day basis is going to change, right? Like one day, something that can get you 1% better is to come in and just like, man, I know I was only supposed to build up to 85% of my lifts today, but I feel so good. I term it, let's ride the lightning, right? Like I say, hey man, let's ride the lightning. Let's five more pounds, 10 more pounds. And those days are okay, right? And then another day getting 1% better might look like I'm so thrashed, or, you know, I had a really rough week of outside stress. You know, we're in the area of COVID. Maybe I had a family member in the hospital and I've been stressing about that. So like for me, 1% better today is to just get on the bike, move, and do some pertinent mobility work. And for me, that's the mental toughness is within that, because the aspect of mental toughness can change from person to person, right? So for me, we talked about learning when to back off was mentally tough on me. So for me, mental toughness looked like that, whereas for other people, it's looking to find those new limits and push past those barriers.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's something that's individualized. I forget if it was Bergeron or Katrin, or I mean, one of those Comtrain people, but they were mentioning that like mental toughness, this was their words, I'm paraphrasing, is basically your ability to be able to do your best in a given moment, which it's like, sometimes you're given a, you know, mediocre performance at best, and that's your, like all you have for the day. And if you can do that to the best of your ability, that's being mentally tough in that moment. Like your workout's going terribly, that's not you being, you know, mentally weak, so to speak. It's just like, okay, what can you do to make that go as good as you possibly can?
Yeah. And that, and not to toot their horn too much, but you know, Ben Bergeron is built a brand off of that mental aspect approach to this sport specifically. And it might even be the same thing you're referencing, but he said, and I'm paraphrasing as well, something along the lines of, we often confuse mental toughness with physical toughness. And those are actually two different things. And physical toughness being able to like tolerate pain, whereas mental toughness is how to deal with adversity. And what that adversity looks like can differ from person to person. Like you said, can differ moment to moment, but how we respond to it and how we persevere through those things or despite those things is what builds that mental toughness.
Yeah, that is the one thing I think they do really well, is like that aspect of things, like on the mindset front. I mean, you said you don't program a lot of those dig deep and like smash an athlete type workouts. If you were to program something like that, and again, this is obviously athlete dependent, so it's like the true answer is it depends. But like what might be an example for like a average class going, you know, sub elite CrossFitter?
Yeah. So I don't want my words to get confused. I definitely program workouts that are like kick an athlete in the face, but they're not necessarily designed in a way where it's like the absolute purpose of this workout is because you can't do X, Y, and Z. And I want you to get to the point where you can't do it and deal with it. So those workouts I will do from time to time. In terms of what you're referencing, I call those sport specific workouts. So, you know, for folks who want to get better at the sport, every week I try to give them one sport specific workout, because I do think competing is almost like a muscle. You have to train it every so often. So like for my athletes, once a week, we call it the Force Through Faith comp workout. So to give you an idea, this coming week, the workout's 30, 20, 10, thrusters at 95, bar facing burpees and chest to bars. Super, super simple. But, you know, if you've done this sport or this training methodology for longer than a couple months, you know, that's going to hurt really bad.
Simple is always worse.
You know, I made a joke.
The more complex the workout is, the better it's going to be.
Yeah, that's it.
So, or at least it's going to hurt. I mean,
yeah, I made a joke with one of our coaches the other day. I was like, the longer you do this, you become more afraid of the light barbell than you do the heavy barbell.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know, with the light barbell, the 75 snatches, the 95 pound thrusters, it's like, Like this is going to be much more of a mental limitation than it is a physical limitation. And that, yeah. And that's the scary part. Cause it's like, you know, you're just going to have to hurt really bad. So yeah. So like that's a work, an idea of a workout we'll do. Sometimes it might be a little bit more complex. Like we did a workout a couple weeks ago that was in a 15 minute window. It was a 1K ski, 50 handstand pushups into a 200 foot handstand walk. And then at 15 minutes, it was a 1K row, 50 front squats at 135 and a 200 foot dumbbell overhead walking lunge. So that was definitely a much more muscle endurance based workout, being that you're hitting similar movement patterns back to back to back. But that's the name of the game, right? You're going to get workouts like that. So that's been fun to continue to get creative with that stuff. And then from a competition standpoint, it's been nice to get roughly like 5 or 6 of my clients, including myself, doing the same workout once a week to be able to, and we're in a group chat. So we like send scores back and forth to each other, stuff like that, which is nice to kind of like keep those competitive juices flowing.
Yeah, absolutely. You get a little bit of a data set as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All that stuff's super helpful. And that's like nice if you have, you know, a coach like you who's working with like a lot of the same sort of clientele. Mm. Where, yeah, you can start to use like comparing the information from one person against the other. Obviously, like open leaderboards and things like that are awesome too, because then you can just see against like, you know, like such a big population.
Right.
So staying on this, you know, mental toughness, so to speak, like digging deep in a workout, not that that's necessarily the same thing, but it can be a form of mental toughness. But I think sometimes like the sport actually gets structured in a way where that's almost part of the testing body almost. So if, like, for example, they might put like a buy-in piece that's like encouraged, like it almost forces you to go really hard on it. So for example, like the assault banger, like you have to sprint the 40 cals for guys. I think it was 30 for females. Like you have to go 100% on that and just hold on. And like sometimes that's like structuring a workout that way, like requires an athlete to dig really deep, but then it also can be sort of like under the umbrella of specificity as well, which it sounds like that's kind of what you're doing on whenever you test those weekly workouts.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. You know, trying to create the specificity, but like you said, dig deep and be able to recover both physically and mentally. But it also kind of trains the mental toughness when it comes to a competition is like the comparison to others, right? I like to draw the correlation. I've said before that like CrossFit's kind of like super high intensity golf in the aspect where like in golf, the best golfers lose way more than they win, and having to handle the mental aspect of shot to shot, hole to hole, how you could triple bogey on a hole. But if you can rebound from it, you could still win the round or win the tournament. Very similar in CrossFit, like, man, even the years Matt Fraser ran away with the games, he didn't win every single workout. And being able to know that, you know, there's going to be people that are going to beat me in a lot of these workouts, but you could still come out on top because of that. Or even you could put in a poorly executed workout and still come out of the weekend feeling good and feeling like you pushed hard and maximized your ability within that weekend, as opposed to letting one poor workout snowball into multiple poor decisions. And then it's just like, I crapped the bed this weekend and then you feel terrible. Right. So all of that kind of goes into that and why that comparison, because you're always going to have, most people are going to have a workout that you look at and it's like, I could beat 90% of the people out there at. And then there's another workout where it's like 90% of the people out there are going to beat me at this workout. And being able to accept those things and deal with them and then train accordingly is a lot that goes into that as well.
Yeah, I think so many athletes, especially beginner ones or ones that have more of an ego in the sport, it's like, I want to crush the workouts that I'm good at. And then they end up avoiding a lot of the stuff that they're not as good at least in their training. And so much of what you need to do in our sport is like, you spend the majority of your training time doing the stuff that you're not good at.
Right.
Which isn't fun for most people, but I mean, you have to like learn to enjoy the process, which is something that you mentioned earlier as well.
Yeah. And that's a lot of where the folks who are doing the things that they're not good at and still enjoying going to the gym every day are the people who have fallen in love with the process. So they have a deep understanding of, these are my goals, whatever they may be, right? And I know I have to do X, Y, or Z to get to my goals or to improve at whatever aspect. And I'm so stoked at the opportunity to do this sucky thing to get to where I want to go, right? You know, I work with a guy, his name's Marquan Jones, who's a former games athlete, and he's going to push to try to get there again this year. And the amount of like boring monostructural stuff he does every single day would turn so many people off, but it's not even a thought for him. He shows up, he hops on the biker, he hops on the true form, he goes for it. And it's like every single day he does it. Most people say they want to be that without doing that because they haven't, you know, Coach Monk used to always say, count the cost. They haven't counted the cost, accepted it, and then fallen in love with that aspect that like I said, they have the opportunity to do it and truly learn to enjoy that process.
Yeah. I feel like it's something that's learned for most people. Like most people don't intuitively are like, oh man, I'm really bad at this thing. This is so much fun. Like that's those two things don't usually correlate really closely. It's definitely something that you have to slowly like see, like be able to zoom in and see the micro progress over a period of time that you actually, you know, reinforce yourself enough where you can enjoy it. And that's probably just in part like paying attention to details and, you know, getting, following all the other good training principles that you normally would.
And I think a lot of it could help with having someone like us, right? Because sometimes you can lose the forest through the trees, right? But when you're writing a program for someone, Ben, it's like, you know, or have a general idea of like what you want them to get out of each session, right? And so maybe you have someone who has a goal of getting better at, let's say, chest to bar pull-ups. And if you ask them to do a max set 6 weeks after you first test them, it would still be the same number and they could be super discouraged. But you see their videos and you see that it's like, no, you're moving so much better. Your positions are there. And then like you as the outsider being able to say like, this is you 6 weeks ago. This is you now. Can you see the difference? And then they're like, oh yeah, I can see the difference. And it's like, so you're on the cusp of busting through. Just keep showing up. Having the person to be able to do that can be super helpful and then start to ingrain those habits, right? So then when you as the coach have said, no, see this progress, then it gets easier as the athlete to be like, I'm just going to show up tomorrow. Hey, I'm just going to show up the next day. I'm just going to keep showing up and I'm just going to keep trying to get 1% better. And then once you've ingrained the process of showing up, you start to reinforce actually enjoying that process. And then as you are enjoying that process, then the results snowball. And then it just creates like a cycle from there, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think if you are fortunate enough to be an athlete who trains around someone who is really diligent and a professional in the sense that they're going to do all the stuff that they need to do, even when it's not fun for them to do, like all that monostructural work that you were talking about him doing, it was like, yeah, all that stuff is not, doesn't necessarily have to be fun either, but like you have to know the intention behind it and you have to, you know, have the perspective and the end goal enough and keep that in mind where you're on a day to day, not sort of like, yeah, like losing the forest through the trees. Mm-hmm. It's just like
and like you said, it's okay for in the moment, something to not be fun. You know,
right.
Some of the things that are most enjoyable in life have moments that are like not very enjoyable, right?
Like marriage.
I was just about to say that. Like literally every successful marriage is something that if you talk to someone who was 85 years old and it was like, who had a very successful marriage and you're like, did you enjoy your marriage? The answer is going to be like, oh my gosh, you know, I love my wife so much. We had so much fun together. But at the same time, if you asked him like, oh, so you must have had no real hiccups along the way. It's like, no. Like there were moments that were probably some of my lowest moments because that, you know what I mean? So it's like some of the most fun things don't have to be fun in the moment. And I do think some people lose sight of that because like you said, they get caught up in that singular moment versus the big picture.
Yeah. And I think also like, for example, if you ask somebody who did like a marathon, like, was that a fun thing to do? Like, they're probably going to say no.
Right.
But yet, it was still something that they chose to do, that they probably talk about, well, potentially they talk about all the time, that they're super, like, proud of that they actually accomplished it, but yet they didn't necessarily, like, enjoy it in that sense.
Sure.
It was more like, you might enjoy the sense of satisfaction that you get from it.
Yeah.
Or some other after effect, but, like, the process itself doesn't have to be fun to be rewarding and to be something that's worthwhile doing.
Right. No, totally agree.
So is there anything, I'm trying to think of other ways that you could help an athlete develop their mindset, or people listening, how they could help just develop a better mindset besides just like training hard on a regular basis? Is there other things that you might prescribe to an athlete, or just conversations that you might have with them that are going to help them develop this overall idea of like a mindset?
I mean, one thing I did with one athlete was I recommended her to read the book, Mindset, actually, by Carol Dweck. It was a book I had heard a lot of times in podcasts that I had listened to. So I read it. And a lot of it is to kind of boil the book down into some main themes. It just talks about a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. And a growth mindset is how things are changing. Skills, abilities can be changed, adjusted. Things can be learned. Whereas a fixed mindset is like, they're in place. This is the way things are. If you're not able to accomplish X, it's you're bad at X, versus something as simple as I can't jump rope, so I'm bad at jumping rope, versus I didn't jump rope well today. You see what I'm saying? So the growth mindset says, I didn't do this well today. It's not like this fantasy land that says like, oh no, I did well. No, you didn't do well, but you just didn't do well today. That doesn't mean you can't do well tomorrow. Versus the fixed mindset says, I am bad at jumping rope. So that's that. That's the end of the story. So that was something I've recommended to athletes. But then reinforcing conversations like that, where it's like, every session doesn't have to have so much weight to it, where it's like, everyone's gone into a session, they do the workout, and it doesn't go well. And like, that eats them up, right? Versus like, oh, that workout didn't go well, I'm still going to show up tomorrow. So being able to have those conversations, and then I reference a lot, you've already heard it, some, you know, looking to get 1% better today. And what does that mean for you today? You know, that's been super helpful, especially with athletes working around injuries. You know, I had a girl that had some hip issues. So her hips were shifting a lot in her squats. So we had to kind of pull things back. We did a lot of tempo work, like trying to regain ownership of the positions in the squat. And at one point she had kind of become frustrated because she had made a ton of progress. And it's like, well, you're still making progress. You're still getting 1% better. It might not feel like it in the squat aspect, but it's like you PR'd your time on this workout, which was really upper body gymnastics focused, right? So you're still getting better. You can still get 1% better as long as you have the right mindset around it. So that's a conversation I have a lot. And then the other conversation I have a lot is controlling what's inside your control. And a lot of what I say is the only things that are really in control are in your control, your effort and your attitude. So if you come into every single session and you give the right effort, and I touched on this already, that can be different on every single day, right? I could be giving 100% effort. And to most people, that just looks like I'm sweating a lot, breathing really hard and super, super, super tired. But I could be giving 100% effort in my movement work, which is like super boring, right? Or, you know, and then controlling your attitude. Hey, I'm super tired today. That's fine. I'm just going to do whatever my body gives me today. I'm going to maximize this session for what it's worth. And I'm going to do the same thing tomorrow. So those are a lot of the conversations I have with my athletes.
You prompted me to remind me of something. I know several people that it's been like, you know, they have a bad day. For example, like say they're supposed to hit certain weightlifting numbers and they can't hit those numbers, and they just like lose their mind that they're not, like screaming. Like, how do you help an athlete like develop that sort of perspective where those sort of reactions aren't happening?
Yeah. So it's so funny because that was me. When I was younger, again, I had this notion that like, oh man, I really love the sport of CrossFit. I want to make it to regionals. And then every session had all this weight to it. And so it was because like I was supposed to hit this weight. I didn't. I'm not getting any stronger. And if I'm not getting stronger, I'm not building towards this goal. And it was just a terrible snowball that went from there. And so I think how I get an athlete to not react like that is start to unpack, A, why does this session or this lift, why is it carrying so much weight for you? Because you only have an emotional reaction like that to things that are important to you. And sometimes it's too important. And then from there, it's why is this so like, why is this singular lift in this singular session amongst, you know, 300 sessions, I'm making up the number, but 300 sessions you're going to do this year. Why does this one session have to break you? And then starting to have those conversations about, you know, where does that negative self-talk come from? You know, I kind of wish I could give you more specific tactics.
But no, that's good because, yeah, I mean, that's a conversation that probably frequently comes up, maybe not in that exact conversation, but like those types of conversations, like, why are you reacting this way?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like this is going on. This shouldn't be happening this way. Why are you doing it this way? And like, that's usually a pretty uncomfortable situation for the athlete to have to kind of work it. Like, that's not necessarily a fun thing to try to work your way through.
Right.
But it's something that's really necessary for you to kind of get out of your own way so you can actually have more optimal growth.
Mm. And yeah, a lot of it is, again, coming back to what's within your control, right? So, you know, a couple of things I've read, you know, is like the weight you lift on that specific day actually is not in your control. There are some outside factors that are actually going to dictate what weight lands above your head in the snatch. But what is within your control is how are your positions, right? Or how are you moving the weight? So, okay, man, I just don't have it today. I think anyone who's done this sport long enough knows those days where you miss a weight that like is usually like a money, like I know I can roll out of bed and hit this weight. And it's like, ooh, all right, today's not my day today, right? But I can still lift whatever weight I'm looking at in such a way that's going to move me forward. So what do my positions look like? Am I staying over the bar long enough? Am I driving through my midfoot? Are my back and my lats tight? Am I keeping my chest tall? Am I, you know, pulling the bar into my hips and pulling my shoulders back so I can get into a nice drive position? And then if you're doing all those things, you're getting better. You're getting that 1% better. And then this is also the problem with training is it's like the longer you do it, you do sessions to see 12 weeks, 6 months worth of progress, right? And then reminding myself this, reminding the athlete this, that it's like if your goal is to compete and your goal is to be a competitor, then your goal should be around the actual competition. This session's not the competition. So why are you treating it like that? So it's like, hey, let's focus on what we can control. So that 3 months down the line, when you are competing, boom, that you hit the weight that you've been looking to hit for the last 3 months.
Yeah. The more you age in the sport, it's, you have to be more conservative and tactile with how you go about hitting stuff at 100% all the time.
Yeah. Otherwise you break.
Exactly. Yeah. Full circle back to what we were talking about before.
Yeah.
So I'm going to switch gears. I want to talk about more of the movement aspect of stuff. We were talking a lot about mindset before. I want to talk more about the movement side of things. And that could be technique, that could be efficiency, whatever you want to call it. I think we're kind of labeling this as movement economy. Is that the same thing as efficiency in your mind?
I would say so. Basically, how, you know, our sport is built off of doing a certain movement as quickly and effectively as possible. You know, I make a joke with some of my athletes that CrossFitters are actually some of the laziest people because we're trying to find the least path of resistance within this workout. But a lot of those things, in my opinion, go hand in hand because from the mental aspect and then the movement economy or movement efficiency aspect, in my opinion, are the two aspects that people generally address the least when trying to improve at the sport. Most people who are trying to improve grasp the effect of like, okay, I saw a couple of videos of this Rich Froning guy and this Matt Fraser guy, and they did like 12 workouts in this day. So if I just do all those workouts, I'm going to get better. You know, it's not hard to convince someone to work harder because conceptually that makes sense. Okay, well, if I do more, I get better. Whereas if you watch the elites, even in how they do some of these movements, or if you get an interview where they clue you into how they were addressing a certain movement, it shows how they've taken the time to find the fastest way for them to do a specific movement. For example, you know, there's a guy I follow that I respect within the coaching space a lot. It's a guy named Max L. Hodge, and he owns Training Think Tank, and he coaches Noah Olson. And he posted something a while back where he was doing hip mobility work because Noah has told him he tries to set his feet. And Noah Olson's a guy, if you watch him squat, already has kind of a wide stance as it is. But he tries to set his feet wide in light thrusters so that his up and down movement is faster, right? So if your feet are set a little bit wider, you're squatting just below parallel as opposed to butt to the ground and then driving and pressing. Whereas if you're driving butt to the ground and then driving up and pressing, you know, that's a split second in a rep, but across 100 reps, that could be 20 to 30 seconds in a workout. And then you put that on the open leaderboard, that could be 300 to 1,000 spots. So little things like that, it's like, okay, well, if we can do this movement better, faster, with better, or if more efficient with better economy, your fitness improves without actually any of your fitness markers improving.
Yeah, I think people often think to themselves like, oh, I'm going to go as hard as I can in this workout. I was definitely of that mindset for a long time. And then at a certain point, it changed almost where sometimes I'll say to myself, like, I want to make this as easy as I possibly can.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to hold this pace. So it's like a fixed output in terms of you were like to judge someone, but I'm going to make it as least cost expensive in terms of energy as I possibly can. So I'm just like moving, you know, super easy. And I feel like that's a good way to think about movement economy or efficiency is, yeah, you're just trying to make it easy rather than just like, you know, blowing yourself up and trying to spend a ton of energy.
Yeah. Or even making movements so root, like, so, for lack of a term, easy for you that you can recover your heart rate and your breathing while moving, as opposed to, like you said, a lot of people, they come out shot out of a gun and they rest by resting. You know what I mean? Like hands on your knees, oh, yeah. Like trying to, well, that's time ticking away. If I can kind of catch my breath and compose myself while doing my burpees, while doing my box jump overs, while on the rower, I'm now running away from you. So being able to move more effectively and figure that out is huge. I mean, I had a great example of it yesterday. I redid one of the open workouts. It was 17-1. And if you recall, that was the, you know, 10 dumbbell snatches, 15 burpee box jump overs, 20 dumbbell snatches all the way up to 50. And I remember the first time I did it, it was like, well, guys, dumbbell snatches in the open. I don't know how the heck to do these. And like, I came out of that workout crippled because my back blew up so bad.
I was in the exact same scenario.
And it was like, I was coaching class at the time. And I remember coming into class and it was like, everyone was like 80-year-olds. Like you're, you know, like your body's like the letter C and you're kind of like holding on to your back. But since then I've learned how to transition the dumbbell in the air on the dumbbell snatch. And I've learned how to do the dumbbell snatch in such a way that it's not as energy costly as you put it. So
right.
I was able yesterday to do all those sets unbroken with, I wouldn't say no problem, but relative, because I knew how to, okay, I'm starting to, my heart rate's starting to get jacked up. So instead of transitioning directly from the top, I'm going to bring it to my shoulder and transition there. Little things like that. And then I was able to PR by 2.5 minutes. And so like, that's a perfect example of being able to, hey, if you can move more effectively, you can gain a lot of time. And I'm not this uber like awesome athlete. I'm a dad of two kids who likes to do CrossFit. So imagine what that can do for across the board, whether you're someone brand new or an elite athlete.
Right. And I'm sure it's not the fact that you moved poorly necessarily in 2017. It was just like in a specific movement like that. Sometimes in a number of specific movements, someone can just clean up like an incredible amount of, they just like leave so much on a table. Yes. In a particular movement. I think some of the ones that you had mentioned, like burpees, box jumps, like a lot of like the body weight, they're not cyclical movements. Like I guess technically CrossFit might define them as gymnastics, things like that, where it's more of, you know, cyclical in nature, where you're kind of doing the same thing over and over again. It's not like a super high tension, like a barbell movement or something, but those, they're a little bit slower turnover movements or something where you could rest in the middle of it. Like you can pretty easily like rest on top of the box and the box jump if you're rebounding or even on the floor.
Yep.
You could, you know, take an extra breath as you're, you know, jump over the bar before you essentially lay back down. Like there's plenty of ways that you can rest during those movements.
Yep.
Versus like, for example, like a chest bar pull up, like good luck resting when you're hanging like moving from the bar through space.
Yep.
Right. In those specific movements, how do you train an athlete to help them get more efficient?
Oof. So in the, are you talking about like in the, I'll call them basic gymnastics movements, like your burpees?
Yeah, let's just stick with those for now.
Okay. So in those movements specifically, the first thing I want to look at is, hey, here's 10 of them, film them. I want to see what they look like. Because in that, if you can't do them efficiently fresh, you're not going to do them efficiently under fatigue. Okay. So let's take a look at what they look like. So that's step one. Step two then is to do what I call like technique work. So it might be as simple as like, we'll use bar facing burpees just for the sake of an example. And I'll say, okay, we want to improve some breathing aspects within this movement. So I might have them do a couple breaths laying on the floor, a couple breaths pushing off the floor, a couple breaths mid step up, they jump over the bar, they do the same thing. Okay. So we're now ingraining the patterns of that movement with effective breathing. From there, it's like, okay, we've done that. Now I want you to do 10 bar facing burpees with the technique we've worked on at a moderate speed. We're going to rest and do it again. Okay. So again, we're not even introducing fatigue yet. Now, once you can do them without being under fatigue, then I start to introduce like some fatigue. And what I mean by that is like EMOMs are a great way to do that, where it's like, you're going to do 6 bar facing burpees every minute on the minute for 10 minutes. Okay. You just accumulated 60 burpees in a 10 minute window. But anyone who's at a moderate or slightly below moderate level in the sport could probably do 6 burpees in 30 seconds, maybe less if you're going a little bit faster. So it's almost like in terms of like you touched on it, a cyclical or aerobic nature, a 1-to-1 work to rest ratio in the textbook environment would be termed aerobic work, right? So now we're introducing some fatigue. Okay, cool. You're able to do that. Let's advance it a little bit. So maybe I'll make the window a 2-to-3-minute window, right? But we're going to add in some other movements with it. Okay, so instead of doing just bar facing burpees, we're going to ask you to do a couple thrusters and maybe some double unders in there, right? And I'm going to set up rep schemes. So if it's in a 3-minute window, you should have some rest, but not a ton. And then from there, it's like pure unadulterated CrossFit. It's like, hey man, we're going to do, you know, dumbbell snatches and bar facing burpees. And that's also super important because now you have to self-regulate your pace, right? So if you're doing an EMOM, it's really easy to have the pace regulated for you, which is why it comes beforehand. But once you get into the sport specific workouts, thrusters and burpees, 30, 20, 10 for time, I now have to figure out, okay, within this specific workout, how do I move in such a way that allows me to get the best score so I don't blow up? And the precursor to that is movement economy. So being able to step up out of the burpee, to step up, bring your other foot forward, to jump over the bar at a slight angle, what I call a swing step back, go to the floor. So that's kind of how I would build a step-by-step progression to get someone who, A, day one doesn't have any of the necessary steps in the process to do an effective bar facing burpee to now someone who's doing effective bar facing burpees in a workout.
Yeah. And there's even like another level of complexity too, where it's like not every workout demands the same technique.
Exactly.
So that's another thing that you could start to coach or prescribe for athletes is like, you know, maybe it's a 16-minute EMOM, the odd minutes you're doing like a step up, like the lunge step variation that you'd like the swing step, and then like a step down.
Mm-hmm.
Like on the other minute, maybe you do a quicker variation where you're jumping right up to the bar and like kind of doing the 180 spin as you jump yeah. over and like having the rep speed be much quicker. And that's like a whole nother thing that we can get into is like, it's not just about having one variation, but you have to be able to have multiple ways to do different types of movements based on like workout demands.
That's what kind of makes our sport tough that maybe like the outside person looking in doesn't realize, right? So for example, we're looking at a burpee. A burpee in terms of just a broad movement couldn't be simpler. You have to fall to the floor and get back up, right? okay, we're adding a little bit of a curveball. There's now a bar there you got to jump over. Okay, big deal. Well, within that, you have the step up version where I go to the floor, I step my foot up instead of bringing 2 feet forward at the same time. I then step my next foot up, jump over. And then I do what's called a swing step where when I land, I swing 1 foot back as opposed to doing like a two-step turnaround. And then there's the other bar facing burpee you'll see the elites do where they're kind of snapping both feet up at the same time, but at an angle. If you understand what I'm saying.
This is what I was trying to describe before. Yeah. And I obviously did not do a good job.
No, you're fine. So you snap up at an angle and you turn to the other side. Well, that's also not even addressing what your upper body's doing. You know, I've seen people that go to the floor, knees hit the floor first, chest hits the floor, almost like a worm burpee.
Yeah.
You then have some people who kind of do a worm burpee, but if you watch like someone like Katrin do it, their chest actually hits first.
It looks so odd when she does it. But even when I watch Frazier in the Nasty Nancy,
okay,
I think that's the right one. Yeah. But like the 400 meter run, I don't know, I think it was like 15 burpees or something, 20 burpees. And the overhead squats, it was like, that's what he did too.
Yeah.
That was interesting because I've seen him do burpees in other workouts and that's not what he did. So maybe it just is based on tricep demand or something is different based on the workout.
Yeah. And that's something where like that's going to be a little bit faster than the previous one I mentioned, just because if you think about it, right, I go to my knees, then my chest, I come off my chest to my knees is one extra step. Then I go to my chest to my knees back up and you're already coming up.
Right.
But then you also have the burpee that's almost like a stiff burpee where it's like someone's entire body hits the floor at the same time. And then they come and jump over. Like folks who are really good at burpees can do them like that. So I just named in some combination, and I'm no mathematician, you know, at least six different versions of a very, very simple movement, right? Then you start to progress to different ways to do, let's say a snatch, a barbell snatch. And then you look at, well, what's the weight? What's the workout? How am I cycling it? Are you doing muscle snatching? Are your hands a little more narrow? Like, there's so many little nuanced ways to
approach.
Yeah. And that's where people who haven't spent enough time in the sport don't realize like, yes, it's a burpee. Yes. I'm just falling to the floor and getting back up. But there's a lot of different ways you could approach that, which will make you more efficient in the long term.
That's a perfect example of like the barbell cycling of ways that even like I couldn't tell you how many CrossFit workouts I've done, but I'm still like discovering new ways to get better at that specifically. Recently, I've been doing a lot more muscle snatch work with like a small like bend at the top. So like a no hip contact snatch, but then you bend a little bit. I call it the snake snatch from Travis Williams back in the day.
Okay.
But things like that where like it saves my grip a little bit. If depending on what the workout is, it's super grip intensive. I don't hit my hip. It doesn't redirect the bar as much. I save my grip a little bit.
Yep.
Like that's something that like, unless you've had experience with it, which again, is super helpful to have like a coach who knows all those different variations that they can be like, hey, in this workout, this might be a good variation for you to play with today in training. Yeah. It's just like endless variations. And it's just, I feel like there's no good way to learn them other than just slowly playing with different variations and having someone help guide you through that process.
Yeah. And you're a great example, right? Like, depending on the weight on the bar, you're a strong guy. So like if it's a 75 pound snatch, you could do that snatch depending on how many are in the workout, right?
Right.
But if you've never practiced it before, it's going to make you super tired. So it's like, okay, let me practice this. Let me ingrain those movement patterns, those neural pathways to do this effectively. And then boom, now I can just do it depending on what the workout looks like. And like you said, now I can play with this in different workout structures and I'll have an understanding of like, okay, this is what it feels like when my grip starts to go or my shoulders start to get really tired from the muscle snatch motion. And I need to do something a little bit different and use my legs a little bit more or whatever the case may be. But like you said, having a coach to be able to dissect it or say, hey, I want you to play with this today. Or, you know, I noticed just to use myself or one of my clients as an example, I programmed a workout the other day that had dumbbell power cleans. And it looked very cumbersome for her. And when I looked at it, she was touching the dumbbells outside of her feet. And for me personally, that's really tough for me to perform the movement, touching them that way. I much prefer to, same thing for you.
Yeah. It's like, I have to basically have my feet touching together if I want to go the dumbbells outside of the legs.
Right. So I'd much rather go a little bit wider and then I touch them kind of back towards my heels and use a hip motion similar to a kettlebell swing.
Right.
And I made that simple switch with her. And if I gave her the same workout, it would either, if it was an interval style workout, it would have been way easier. If it was a true CrossFit style workout, the score would have been better. She even commented like, oh my gosh, this is way easier. But without the exposure and people kind of mixing ideas on how to approach a movement, you don't get that exposure to be more efficient.
Even asking people in, if you're in a class environment, like go up to the more experienced athletes in the class and like, or just like watch them in their, you know, if you're lifting or whatever you're doing, you know, if you're not in the same heat or something, like try to watch them and just like see their different technique or like pick their brain about stuff like, hey, I saw you do this variation. Why do you do it this way? I think that's another benefit besides working with a coach is having training partners or other people that you can go to that you respect that have been around for a while with different things, and they can help suggest and kind of point, give you pointers on different, you know, ways that you could clean up your movement.
Yeah. Finding someone who's good at X.
Yeah, even exactly. They don't even have to be better at you at everything. So for example, you might be like the best person at your gym and you're like, oh, I don't need to learn from anybody here. But like you might have, you know, somebody comes in and they're a really experienced runner.
Yeah.
And they might not be able to do anything else, but they can run really well. And they could probably give you some pretty good hints on how to get better at running.
Exactly. Exactly. Like
there's somebody that you can learn from.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that prevents people from learning from people or maybe having like a mentor of some type is that it's like, yeah, they have to be the best at everything. It's like, no, they just have to be better than you at like one thing.
Right.
They're better at you that one thing, then it'll be useful to you.
Yeah. And I mean, that's what the best are doing is they're finding ways to be more efficient with what they're doing. I mean, there's a classic example of Matt Fraser. I don't remember if it was his first games he won, but there's that classic sprint event where he was just trash and he finished like last in the event. And I don't know how true the story is, but the story goes that he reached out to his former weightlifting coach because he was a high school track coach and was like, hey, like I need to learn how to run. Like, can you coach me? And he's like, yeah, show up to the track at this time, you know, whatever. So Fraser's like, all right. So he shows up. Well, his coach coached high school, like sophomore girls. So he's on the track with a bunch of 16-year-old girls just getting dusted every single interval. But he was humbled himself enough to say, like, I don't care if I'm getting beat by these high school girls. Like, I'm here to get better at my sport. And if learning how to run more efficiently and being better at running is going to get me there, then I'm going to go do it. And so, yeah, being able to eliminate that ego, whether you're working with a coach or not, and find someone who can advise you or you're like, hey, you're super good at this. What do you do with that? What are you thinking when you do this is only going to make you better.
Yeah. Again, I think one of the things that is often overlooked for the elites in CrossFit is the level of care they put into every single movement that they do.
Yeah.
So like, for example, everybody sees, for example, the mindset of Fraser, like when he talks on different podcasts and this and that, and just like, okay, that's generally understood that he is like a killer mentality when he goes to compete and this and that. But like, I don't think people give as much attention to, probably just because it's not super sexy.
Yeah.
the fact that like, yeah, he's going to the track to get better at a single movement, like just running.
Yep.
Or, you know, how much time he spent. I remember, I forget where I heard this, but like him going in at like the evenings and just flipping the pig at his gym because he was really bad at flipping the pig in the one games. Like spending so much time to learn a single movement.
Yep.
It's just like, it's an important part, a necessary part of the sport that you have to be, again, willing to enjoy, even though it's not always necessarily fun.
Right. And to kind of like reflect back to what we were saying before, right? So let's say he went in every single, and I don't know that I recommend someone doing something every single day.
You know, not that I was recommending that. Yeah.
No, I know that, but like, let's just say, he went in every day and flipped the pig 10 times, right? That's not a lot of volume. That's not going to hurt him. But let's say, so over the course of a week, you accumulate 50 to 70 flips of the pig. Well, let's say that's 40 weeks of training before the games. I'm just making up some numbers. That's almost 300 flips, regardless of whether he did it in a workout or not. So he's now accumulated hundreds of reps before he's asked to then go do it. And so that's where, again, like one session is part of a big picture. So if you can touch on things and continue to touch on them and think and refine Well, now all of a sudden going into a competition, well, I've done 1,000 reps of this movement. I know how to approach this workout, or I have a general idea of how to approach this workout or this movement within this workout.
Even taking that mindset of being really methodical and trying to learn everything about the movements, I think it also lends itself to you having more longevity in those movements, not just like in an immediate workout, but over also like the long term. So for example, if you are really focused on being as efficient as possible in your chest bar pull up, you're going to make sure that you're like using your legs as much as you're possible and getting a good hip pop out of the top and keeping your legs relatively straight and like using the straight arm pulling, all the little stuff, making sure that you have clean body lines. All that stuff is also going to help you not beat up your shoulders.
Yes.
Like versus if you were just focusing on doing chest bar pull ups and going as hard as you could in the workout. Like if you focus on the efficiency and movement economy side of that equation, your long-term potential for sustained non-injury training is so much higher,
yeah,
which is crucial.
Oh yeah. Especially in a sport like this, because you know, the people who get better are the people who can stack the most quality training sessions. And if you're injured, who knows how long it is before you get another quality training session. So being able to move effectively so you can continue to move is super important. And this, and on top of it, like I'm sure your clientele is like this, like I don't coach any professional CrossFitters, right? So the people I coach, you know, I coach some people who are pretty competitive, but they also have a full-time job and they also have kids. So it's like, you also can't afford to get hurt because you can't afford to be in a sling and try to go be an accountant, like, you know, or whatever the case is, you know, like,
yeah.
I can't afford to be in a knee brace and like, you know, carry my kids around the block, you know? So regardless of who your clientele is, people, you know, listen, injuries, if you're going, and this is another conversation I have with people where if they're like, hey, I really want to push the boundaries and compete at as high a level as I can, I tell them flat out, like, okay, well, then you have to accept the fact that in order to push your boundaries, there's this line of injury and we at times are going to have to ride it. And
yeah,
sometimes I'm going to shoot too far below and, you know, you won't get any nicks or you won't get anything that flares up, but you're not going to prove as much as you want. And sometimes it'll go a little too far and there'll be like a pull or something like that.
Right.
But to improve, you have to try to ride that line. Well, at the same time, you know, being able to move effectively is going to allow us to ride the line as best as possible without spilling over, which is going to be super helpful regardless if someone's an elite athlete and they do this to make money, or you have a 5-year-old kid who wants to go to the playground and you want to be able to play.
Yeah. It's a really good thing for people to keep in mind. Even if you're focused on movement quality and moving effectively and efficiently in your workouts, another thing that's helpful for, as I'm just thinking about this, is like you will not just be less beat up and less likely to be injured, but like sometimes you might not even get injured, but you might have a bunch of inflammation or just like stiff joints where you're not able to actually get in good positions. And then you go to do your weightlifting work the next day and you're not able to lift as much, or you're getting, you know, compensations. Mm-hmm. Like it's a compounding effect where this is just reinforcing to all the listeners that like you want to focus on producing the best quality of training possible, not just trying to go hard all the time.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of this is assuming we're talking to the people who want to improve at CrossFit. I mean, I have plenty of people who come to the gym who they're just looking to get a workout because they want to look good, feel good, and that's fine. And if that's who you are, do you really need to be putting in more than 3, maybe 4 sessions a week? You know what I mean? Probably not. So you know, like finding why you're doing this is going to be super helpful in that regard. But assuming you are someone who, whether you're a regular gym goer in a class setting or someone other than that, if you enjoy the sport aspect of it and want to improve, that movement efficiency side is going to give you the biggest bang for your buck in a multitude of ways. Because like you said, it keeps you healthy, but you know, I could help someone and you could help someone, not specific to me, but you could help someone get better at a workout in 5 minutes by putting them in a better position versus taking 5 weeks of an aerobic training protocol. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's very, very true. You look really good as a coach when you do that.
You look like a magician.
you're going to adjust this position and you're going to, you know, shift your hips back just a little bit and this and that. And you just make a few little tweaks and the person improves so much.
Yeah. I mean, I have a client, when we started working together, his deadlift was like 380. He recently PR'd at 415. Now, don't get me wrong. We went through a pretty progressive deadlift protocol, but during just one of his sessions, I'm looking at one of his videos and I'm like, I think you want your hands and your feet might be a little too wide. Definitely his hands. I was like, can you scoot your feet in a little bit, move your grip in a little bit and see if that helps with your pull? Instantly, it was like, oh my gosh, this feels so much better. Like I have so much more drive off the floor. I'm able to lock my lats in better. It was just like the littlest tweak. But like you said, it's like, oh my gosh, you're a miracle worker. It's like, no, I just helped you get into a little bit better of a position.
Yeah. That's one of the things that you always feel that way too, or the athlete feels that way when it's something that they didn't recognize initially. So again, I think it is super helpful to have somebody else taking a look at your movement on a regular basis and helping you evaluate, whether that's a class and a coach, whether that's a one-on-one coach, whether that's your training partners doing it, or a combination of all three. That's super helpful. All right. Final question for you here.
Okay.
What is something an athlete listening could do today? So like something that they could do, like that's actionable, that will help them lead to better movement economy.
Yeah. I think the first thing I would do is if there's a movement you're really struggling with, something you could do today is A, video yourself doing it, and B, find someone who does it well. Ideally, when it comes to finding someone who does it well, it would be finding someone in person. So whether that's somebody at your gym or a training partner, but if you don't have that available, then, you know, YouTube's a really great tool. But those are definitely the two things is, okay, well, how do I look when doing it? Because it's happened to me before. I thought my body was doing something and I go and look at the video and it's like, oh, why are my hips so far? You know what I mean? So do that and then find someone who does it better than you and take some cues and some feedback from them.
I love it. That's really good stuff. Good advice. Hey, Chris, thanks for doing this today.
Thanks, Ben. I had a lot of fun.
Hey, it's Ben again, and I wanted to take a minute to talk about our online training program, The Protocol. The Protocol is for athletes who want to train for the sport of fitness. It's programmed by me, and it's my best attempt at preparing athletes with varying strengths and weaknesses for the demands of the sport. And I do this through the use of silos, which basically means I segment parts of the program based upon athletes' ability in a particular area. So for example, an element of the program this fall on Tuesdays and Thursdays was gymnastics-focused training. And there are four different silos, so athletes could choose to work on chest bars or muscle-ups or handstand push-ups or handstand walks. In other words, we are all doing the same core program, but there are ways to individualize it on a weekly basis. And as part of the program, I also include coach's notes, technique videos, and educational resources almost daily. My goal is to not just have this feel like you're doing a workout plan, but to feel like I'm actually coaching you through the process of becoming the best athlete you can be. And having access to the protocol is just part of the benefit of being a pro member. You also get instant access to the vault, which is exactly like it sounds. It means that you unlock the ability to be able to download all the programs that I've ever written. So this includes things like Bulletproof Body, which is the accessory work for functional fitness, Gymnastics Density for the Big Five, Functional Thickness, Your First Muscle Up, Cyclical Supremacy, Overhead Squat Mobility, Breathwork for the Support of Fitness, and it could go on and on. And lastly, you get instant access to pro articles, which are on topics that I really want to safeguard from the public and keep for my athletes. Stuff like cycle speeds for CrossFit open movements, strength ratio data analysis, so basically determining your relative weaknesses on strength work, breaking down sanctionals programming or games programming, energy systems testing and analysis, and a whole lot more. And if this sounds like stuff that you're into, you can get a 7-day free trial of Pro. Simply head over to zorfitness.com/pro. Thanks for listening, and as always, stay the course.